Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you today from Manchester, New Hampshire, in the thick of the nation's first presidential primary of 2008. This hour, we're looking at the Democrats, and what a story. Hillary Clinton led for months in opinion polls. On primary day here, she's trailing. Barack Obama is riding an Iowa bounce and a surging campaign. Edwards is still slugging. The nomination, the future of the Democratic Party, and the Oval Office are in play. This hour on Point from New Hampshire, the Democrats duke it out. We have some terrific political minds with us this hour in Manchester. In our first hour, we looked at the Republican race. Now we're on to the Democrats. You can hear both hours at our website, onpointradio.org. In a moment, we'll be joined by E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post. But joining me first in our New Hampshire studio with the latest poll numbers is Dante Scala, professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire and author of Stormy Weather, the New Hampshire Primary and Presidential Politics. No stormy weather today, Dante Scala. It's a beauty out there.
Yeah, it's sunny. It's warm out, 50 degrees, and New Hampshire voters are turning out to the polls in record numbers, probably upwards of 500,000 folks. About 60% of registered voters are going to be out there at the polls today.
The sound of many feet at the polls. With us also from Time Magazine, Joe Klein, author most recently of Politics Lost. Joe Klein, great to have you.
Good to be here, Tom.
And our own Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst and Granite State resident. Jack, great to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
Dante, take us first to those polls. Soon enough, we'll have it straight from the voters. But coming into this race, it was looking awfully good for Barack Obama. What's the latest as New Hampshire votes?
It looks like consensus is that Barack Obama, the only question now is whether his victory will be in the single digits or whether he'll have a double-digit margin of victory tonight. I mean, more, just about all the polls show that he's basically been riding the wave, really, ever since he arrived in New Hampshire on Friday from his Iowa victory. Clinton isn't necessarily slipping all that much, but Obama's just riding right past her, and they just don't know what to do about it.
You know New Hampshire well. In the polls, in everything you've seen, is there a chance for Hillary Clinton to pull this out? She's fighting all the way to the end.
I think the best-case scenario for her is that somehow blue-collar Democrats, her vote in New Hampshire, turn out to vote in large numbers. She pulls out the vote from Manchester, Nashua, the cities of Manchester, of New Hampshire, and then somehow that undeclared voters decide not to go for Obama, that they turn out for John McCain instead. But that seems unlikely. I think the problem is that she can do all that she is supposed to do in terms of turnout, in terms of targeting her vote, and she'll still get swamped anyway by probably the massive turnout from those more independent-minded, undeclared voters in New Hampshire who were already breaking toward Obama before Iowa happened. And that's the problem.
Joe Klein, here we are just 4 days after Iowa, and the story unfolds and unfolds. How do you see the dynamic of this Democratic contest right now?
I think that Hillary Clinton is getting mugged by history. It's a tidal wave. It's one of the most exciting things I've ever seen in politics, and it's extremely moving. I mean, you know, to me, the most moving thing about Iowa was that you'd go into these small towns and go to the events of other candidates, John Edwards, Bill Rich, whatever, Joe Biden, and the folks in the audience would be talking about the local Obama organizer who had moved into town last March, last April, and had become part of the community, you know, was doing good works in addition to organizing. And it seemed to me, it gave me chills, because it seems to me that this is...
Take you back, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, this is the best generation of young organizers since my poor, decrepit baby boom generation back in the 60s. And I think that no matter what happens now to Barack Obama, and you got to assume that he's cruising, these kids are going to transform the Democratic Party. They will be the backbone of the Democratic Party for the next 20 years.
Jack Beatty, this was supposed to be the firewall state for Hillary Clinton. She had the money. She had the name. She clearly had the grit and determination and continues to show that. Just, never mind her emoting yesterday. Who wouldn't? And here we are talking about an Obama sweep. Now, Barack Obama was Barack Obama 6 months ago, and people weren't saying Obama sweep, history in the making, mugged by history. What happened between his low and what's beginning to look like this high?
Well, I think in a way, getting to your point, Joe, she defined herself out of the race. She made the race about experience, and it's a change year. And it looked like a good strategy over the summer. Remember those debates? She made him, you know, he was on the defensive. He didn't seem to know as much about, he was rash in what he said about Pakistan or something. And she seized on that and said, I'm experienced. I have a, and the whole premise of the, if this campaign had a slogan, it would be, don't stop thinking about yesterday. I mean, that really.
Hillary's campaign.
Yeah.
Ouch,
I mean, that really has been, I mean, you know, it's a campaign about the restoration. Every speech I saw would have passage, you know, phrase after phrase in the 90s under my husband's administration. We did. And it's all about yesterday.
One of the key things here is that we political sorts tend to think that these elections go on as long as we're interested in them. And in American politics, now you have two-year elections, and the first year is spent raising money, and the public isn't involved. The public gets involved at the last minute. Iowa is like a British election. It's a one-month election, and, you know, the polls were running on name recognition and familiarity, and then at the very end, people make a gut-level decision about who they want to have in their living room for the next 4 years. And they would and they looked at Barack Obama, and they say, wow, that's interesting. I want to see a little more of that.
Dr. Scala, you've been out there. You know New Hampshire well. Describe that gut decision that's been made over these recent weeks, these turnouts for Obama. We see report after report about the rhapsodic receptions for this guy, people bringing their kids so they'll remember the day when. What has gone on here with the Clinton mystique and the Obama mystique in these weeks run up to the election?
Like Joe's saying, I think it's a generational shift in the Democratic Party. When Hillary Clinton came up to the state to begin her campaign, she was speaking to people she knew from her husband's campaign. And that's a previous generation of Democratic activists in New Hampshire. And what's happened in the 15 years since is that this state has become, its Democrats have become much more upscale, much more liberal to progressive, much more better educated. So your typical new Democrat now is a woman who works in a, you know, her husband works, she works, they work in white-collar jobs. They're economically, they're fine with the free market, fine with globalization. They may work for corporations like Fidelity, but they're socially very liberal, environmentally conscious. And they look back on the Clintons. I mean, they might have been teenagers. Bill Clinton was president.
Yeah.
But now they look back on the Clintons and they say, well, it was kind of a mixed bag because Bill Clinton failed to accomplish some Democratic goals like, say, health care for all.
And what about the independents? They played a huge role in Iowa. Are they going to be the margin of victory for Obama in New Hampshire, or can he win it with Democrats alone? And if it's independents pouring in, what does that mean for the party in this state, just for starters?
Well, I think what we've seen in 2004 and 2006 is we've seen a shift of independent voters into the Democratic ranks. They broke for John Kerry in 2004. That's why he carried the state. They broke for the Democrats in 2006. And I think what we're going to see is, we'll know whether it's a short path for Obama or a long path based on what those blue-collar voters do. Because if he's keeping it close in those blue-collar cities like Manchester, Nashua, then he's going to win by double digits. And that means that white working-class voters are starting to get on the bandwagon. And that would be really Clinton's last remaining pillar of strength within the party.
Looking like a giant day, it may be, for Barack Obama, but Hillary Clinton's still out there fighting. Dante Scala with the University of New Hampshire, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
Joe Klein, look forward. A lot of independents working here, a new generation. Does the Democratic Party come out of this campaign season as a revamped party if it's Barack Obama? Or is this just a new, you know, cloth thrown over the same machine?
Well, it's about time. I mean, there are pendulum swings in politics, mm-hmm. And I think that what we've seen in the Bush administration, especially over the last two or three years, has been like the raggedy end of the pendulum swing that began with Ronald Reagan, who said that government isn't part of the solution, it's part of the problem. And when you govern like that, you wind up nominating the head of the Arabian Horse Association to be in charge of FEMA, and you get the disaster of Hurricane Katrina. I think that American people are ready for a message now that says that government can be part of the solution to a lot of these problems, and government is actually necessary.
E.J. Dionne joins us, Washington Post columnist, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. E.J., great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
What do you see going on in New Hampshire today, you know, in the narrow focus, and look bigger as well? What's happening here? What are the Democrats?
I have been struck going to Hillary Clinton events. She is an incredibly smart woman. She knows mm-hmm. policy inside out. If this were an examination, in a no policy left behind program, she'd win. If we elected a president by examination, she'd probably win. But this election isn't about, I think the Obama has a different theory of the case about how you change the country. Obama is an old community organizer, as Joe pointed out earlier, and he believes that you create change by building a mass movement from the bottom up. He talks about, the word he uses most often in his speech, I think David Brooks mentioned this also in his column today, is the word you.
Not me, not I.
But you, and that you is very specific. A lot of politicians talk about you. Clinton always said this election is about you. But his you is a very active you that's supposed to do more than just cast votes. And what he's saying is the way to overthrow this sour and reactionary period, as I would see it, is to for citizens to organize. And his bipartisanship that he talks about is very different from that David Boren kind of bipartisanship that they had a meeting about.
Right. This Obama, is in Oklahoma where everybody's saying, let's link hands and get together, and maybe there was going to be another mayor of New York who would have come out of that, but Obama's kind of, leapfrogging all that.
Right, but he's doing it in a different way. Then we can talk about that after the break, but he wants to convert people into being part of a new coalition. He doesn't want a split the difference between white right-wing Republicans and whatever's on the other side.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're in New Hampshire today, looking this hour at the Democrats' primary battle. E.J. Dionne is with us, Washington Post columnist, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Great to have you with us in Manchester, New Hampshire, E.J.
Thank you.
Joe Klein is here from Time Magazine, author of Politics Lost, The Natural Primary Colors. You remember that, all about the Clintons with a little fiction thrown over the thing as Mr. Anonymous. Jack Beatty's here, down from Hanover, New Hampshire. He's been watching everything. Everybody's talking about Barack Obama. Clinton as well, and we'll look at that. We heard Obama in Rochester, New Hampshire today, where he defined for the audience there what his campaign is all about.
That's what hope is, imagining and then working for and fighting for what didn't seem possible before. That is the opportunity, New Hampshire, that we have right now.
You hear the race in that voice. He's been talking a lot. They all have, and it's starting to take its toll. Here he is again in Rochester, New Hampshire, saying he's been a leader in more ways than one.
I've been talking about change since the beginning of this election. I talked about it when we were up, and I talked about it when we were down. And it must be catching on because everybody's talking about change now.
Jack, you've seen Obama in the halls, you've seen the crowds, you've felt what's going on there. How do you describe it?
Well, I think Max Weber described it best. He defined charismatic authority as inhering in gifts of grace. And if ever a politician had gifts of grace, this man does. And I think that, if you look at the Iowa campaign, his campaign really came up with the speech he delivered at the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner. He came, he was the last speaker, and he put his passion into it. I think he had been resisting his own gifts of grace, almost out of a fear that it was, you know, implicitly demagogic, and he put passion into what he was saying, and he spoke into the applause and jacked it up as he was speaking. And everyone, you know, I mean, what is the nature of this charisma thing? I mean, it's distress. It's people's feeling that they're not being listened to. It's the hope for things unseen. I mean, it's all this stuff. But it has to do with the feelings people have toward a candidate and with how that candidate becomes the focus of that hope. And he's defined it, I think, very well. Plus, he just has politics for Hillary is about the lyrics. For him, it's the music.
Joe Klein, how far does that charisma, the gifts of grace, go in a campaign? How effective are they for a Democrat who may end up sitting in the Oval Office? How far do gifts of grace take a contender, a leader?
Well, first of all, when Jack is talking about lyrics and poetry, my pal EJ is a modest sort, and let me just say that he wrote a tremendous column this morning in the Washington Post. All of you should go out there and hit your computers.
Pull it up.
Bless your soul, Jack.
Yeah, about how Hillary Clinton cited Mario Cuomo's line about you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose.
Yep.
She's been governing in campaigning in prose. But, you know, I think grace really is the the key word here, grace under pressure. And also the other quality that he has that's very interesting. By the way, last summer, Ted Sorensen wrote a piece for the New Republic, Ted Sorensen being John Kennedy's great speechwriter, about how Obama reminded him more of John Kennedy than any candidate since. And that points to the other quality that Obama has. It's a kind of cool. It's an ironic detachment. He has an ironic, self-deprecating sense of humor. And I think that as this goes forward, if he becomes the nominee, ironic detachment and self-deprecating humor are the best way to disarm your opponent's attacks. If he can just laugh at the Republicans when they come at him brutally, as they will, he will be in a pretty good position, I think.
EJ, but what about Hillary Clinton? You write about what's going on here with poetry and prose, but this is a strong woman. She has dug deep for this campaign. There's no question about that. Whatever you think of her, whether she's your candidate or not, she's not giving up yet. She's still got a big war chest. I mean, before we hand it all to Obama, is it really that simple?
Well, first, I want to commend Jack Beatty for quoting that famous political pundit, Max Weber.
Little did Max know.
Yes.
You can tell we're on NPR.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Weber. What's odd, I don't fully understand how the Clinton campaign made the decisions they made, that they really had one strategy, and that strategy was incumbency. In effect, they turned her by running her as the front-running candidate, as the inevitable candidate. They positioned her as the incumbent in this race, which left her wide open to Obama's argument that we want to transcend not only the Bush era, but also the 90s. We want to get over Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, a phrase every time it's repeated probably picks up Obama some votes. And what was missing from the Clinton campaign, and maybe it was going to be very hard for her to do, was a sense of uplift about why is she running for president. Now, I heard her at an event a couple of days ago where a woman asked her about foster care.
Yeah.
And she was very moving. When she told that woman she would make foster care the highest priority, a high priority, she didn't lie and say highest, but a high priority of her administration, you knew she believed it and she knew the issue. But I don't think she presented herself as someone who is about more than a political process to get elected in a campaign. And Joe pointed out to me something he reported a while back, that his great line, Bill Clinton's great line about hope, I was born...
I still believe in a place called hope.
Was Hillary Clinton's line.
Now, and it was a great one.
Yeah. Exactly. And you wonder, why hasn't she been able to find that kind of thematic resonance? And I think, yes, they have to encourage doubts about Obama. Is he ready to be president? But I don't think you're going to derail this hope machine with that kind of attack.
She also uttered the phrase, false hope. Don't give Americans false hope. That's the counter theme entirely.
And Obama grabbed that immediately and basically said this is a sign of cynicism. My favorite line in Obama's stump speech is when he looks in the audience and he says, oh, they're attacking me. Obama's talking about hope again. They call me a hope monger. Hope monger is a great phrase.
Right.
Let's look at that moment yesterday that turned everybody's head when Hillary Clinton, there was that rare display of emotion on the campaign trail. She has been tough, tough, tough in the teeth of a lot of campaigning here. She was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, talking with a group of women there, and one asked her how she gets through each day.
It's not easy. And I couldn't do it if I just didn't, you know, passionately believe it was the right thing to do. You know, I have so many opportunities from this country. I just don't want to see us fall backwards. You know, so... You know, this is very personal for me.
And you don't even need to see it. You can hear it right there. Hillary Clinton welling up. You do not get that every day. But she was still in there fighting. And you can hear that right here when she went on to talk about, to suggest she is the candidate best prepared to step into the White House.
Some of us are right and some of us are wrong. Some of us are ready and some of us are not. Some of us know what we will do on day one and some of us haven't really thought that through enough.
Joe Klein, you followed the Clintons for a long time, including Hillary. What do you make of this moment yesterday?
Well, I was touched by it. It was amazing that she was able to hold it together, given the fierce emotion.
No teardrop did fall.
No, in fact, You know, I've had so many memories watching her do this, and I really have an awful lot of affection for her because she does try so hard. Over the last 5 years, I've watched her learn the U.S. military as a member of the Armed Services Committee, and I've had. I once asked a very prominent general, "Are there any Democrats who might be president who understand the way you think?" And he says, "You mean aside from Hillary?" It's sad to see this happen, but I think that EJ is absolutely right, that she has a very legislative personality. She does not have an executive or leadership personality. In fact, she very rarely uses the word leadership. I think that, you know, this ain't the end of Hillary Clinton. If she loses this nomination, she's going to be a powerhouse in the United States Senate. And that'll be all to the good for the country.
What if she just loses New Hampshire? Where does that leave her? Will she power on? Can she? How far? How long?
I think they're going to have to make some tough decisions over the next 24 hours. You got to figure that, you know, the word is that the Culinary Workers Union, that often discussed powerhouse in American politics,
yes,
in Nevada, who, you know, the people who staff all the hotels are about to endorse Obama if he wins here, and that means the Nevada caucuses a week from Saturday, you know, may go his way, and also it'll be interesting to see what the African American vote in South Carolina does. They've been holding back because they thought, oh, you know, white people never vote for a black man.
Yeah, and then they did in Iowa.
And, you know, you hear that she's not going to even play in South Carolina because of that, which brings us to February 5th and the huge array of primaries that day. And to win in that sort of circumstance, she's going to have to do what she hasn't done this far, and that is campaign and poetry. She's going to have a theme. She's going to have to talk about the future rather than the past.
We've got, we're looking at Democrats today, a very big day in New Hampshire with the primaries right here. Let's take a call from George in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I want to look at this from a very different standpoint. I'm out here right now in Londonderry, actually canvassing for Obama, knocking on doors, getting people out. And I think that, for the most part, you all or people in general are missing the point.
What's the point, George?
I think the point is this. I think that Obama is able to tap into he's able to give people pieces of themselves back to themselves. He's able for people to reconnect to themselves that they've lost over the last 8 years of this Bush/neocon horror, and people are reacting to that.
That sounds like magic. How does one guy stand on a stump and do that, give people back to themselves, George? That's a tall order.
Well, it's because when people look at him and they hear him, it resonates to something inside them that's always been there, and they forgot, and they haven't been able to access because of everything that's been going on for the last 8 years. And now comes along a guy who is genuine, authentic, who says what he thinks, who has energy and passion and believes, and he understands that it's not about Obama. He understands it's about something that's way beyond him. And I can give you a specific about that.
Okay.
When he won in Iowa, he said, "You have done something that the cynics thought we couldn't do." And Hillary came to it and said, "I am so ready to be president. I am so ready to lead." She thinks it's about her. Obama understands it's not about him. It's about something that's way beyond him and much bigger than him.
There's George. He's out canvassing for Barack Obama, and we hear that. George, you sound on fire yourself. E.J. Dionne, it's almost as though we're talking about a second coming here. I mean, do we need to get a grip, or is this just that sort of once-in-a-generation political, oh, my gosh?
No, I think the caller made an important point. Chris Matthews gave me a ride last night, and he said Obama isn't about reform or change. He's about deliverance, and, you know, deliverance from a particular era. And I think it is no accident that it was the two preachers who came out of Iowa. And Obama, Mike Huckabee, is obviously a preacher by training, a Southern Baptist. But Obama has a preacher's gift, and he's a preacher in a different tradition than Mike Huckabee. It's a sort of Martin Luther King tradition. It is, to some degree, the tradition of the African-American church, but to some degree, the tradition of liberal Protestantism. But with this very personal piece, sense that the caller referred to. And I think this religious sense that appeals actually to a lot of secular voters is very important to his success.
Jack, Joe, I want to get you on this, but we've got so many callers. Let me get a couple more here. Charles in Beverly Hills, California. Charles, what do you see, my friend?
Well, welcome back, Tom. What
Thanks
I see
much.
Is that Iowa revealed itself as the American Idol generation. It's where people kick back and they take impressions and they think, oh, I'm so excited, I think I'll vote for this person to be the winner because of their performance. And then on the other hand, well, I'd be scared to death if Obama became the president, not because I'm predicting that he wouldn't be a successful president, but I think George Bush showed us how difficult a job it is to be the president and what is required to be the president, experience, knowledge, coalitions, friends in Washington.
Charles, it sounds like you're hanging tough for Hillary. You're still hanging your head on Hillary. Do you think she'll still be in the race when the bus shows up in California on Super Tuesday?
Absolutely. Super Tuesday is really, that's the main ball game. This is just kind of out-of-town warm-up.
Let me get one more from Davenport, Iowa. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to comment about Huckabee and Obama, because I think one of the key things that has to be understood here is that both those candidates have touched things in a lot of us. And as a spiritual agnostic, if Obama were to stumble, I would be tempted to vote for Huckabee. Hillary came out here and presented herself as some kind of legacy. Her campaign brought up drugs, and it brought up a 5-year letter by Barack Obama, and out here in Iowa, we're pretty...
The kindergarten
deep.
Letter, yeah.
And we see through that, and clearly, she was not a real candidate, and I would say that John McCain probably comes in there in third place, but the key to this is that there's a sea change in what people want, and Huckabee and Obama epitomize that.
Well, look at John Edwards. He certainly looks like a real candidate to me, but the magic seems elsewhere today. And, Jack, you're hearing it from our callers. What do you say?
Well, you know, in his book, The Audacity of Hope, Obama talks about the real barrier for candidates like him, cynicism. And, you know, we have today not just the cynicism of the know-nothing. Oh, hell, it's all crooks. We have informed alienation. The more you know,
justified cynicism.
The more you know about American politics, the worse it looks. And this fellow has really somehow said to people, suspend that. Talk about the willing suspension of disbelief. Put that out of your mind for a moment, and let's imagine something else. Let's imagine a cleaner slate. That I know all this stuff will pull us. This is the gravity. But let's fly over here for a while and think of the possible. And he's going right at this issue of belief. Do you think government can work for people today? Today, in this investor-driven politics. And he's saying, you got to believe before something happens. And that's, I think, your point. You got to believe.
Joe Klein, Charles in Beverly Hills says, wait a minute, this is all American Idol stuff. Obama's just batting his eyes. Come on, get
over
it.
Well, you know, experience is an issue, and I wish Obama knew more about national security and defense issues. But the problem isn't, George Bush's problem wasn't the lack of experience, it was the lack of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And Obama, I posted something last night. In his spare time for the last week, Obama has actually been trying to negotiate a peace deal in Kenya, his father's home, his grandmother's home. He's been talking to Desmond Tutu and the leaders of both sides there.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Manchester, New Hampshire on primary day in New Hampshire, the first in the nation primary of the year 2008. We've looked at Republicans. This hour we're looking at the Democrats. Obama looking very good in opinion polls and a lot of excitement here. Hillary Clinton vowing she is in there and going to stay in there. We'll talk about John Edwards. What do you see going on in this vote, in this party, in this race for the White House? Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst, is with us right here in Manchester, New Hampshire, as is E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post. Look for his new book coming out very soon, Sold Out. That's Sold with a U, Reclaiming Faith in Politics After the Religious Right. It'll be on Amazon and in bookstores in a couple of weeks. Joe Klein, Time Magazine columnist, is with us. Joe, great to have you as well. Let's see, E.J., just before the break, we had Charles in Beverly Hills throwing the American Idol taunt at the Obama crowd. What do you say?
I
couldn't resist pointing out that Andy Stern, the president of the Service Employees Union, very politically savvy guy, said Democrats often nominate somebody who can win College Bowl when they need to nominate somebody who can win American Idol if they're going to win the election. And Bill Clinton perhaps had a little bit of both of those. And maybe Obama will.
Maybe Obama, too. Let's get a call from Chesapeake, Virginia. Anita, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, Anita.
Thanks for taking my call. I must say that the only people that should be in dilemma at this juncture is the black women of this great nation. We are making history. We have the first woman that stands a real good chance to be in the White House. We have the first black man that stands a real good chance of being in the White House. This is so exciting. But when this comes down to a vote, blacks will vote for blacks, and I cheer them for doing that. Women should vote for women. And I would cheer them for that.
Anita, it sounds like you may be sitting on a tough fence here. Maybe black and clearly female. Where does your vote come down?
I am not black.
Okay, great. Sound Caribbean to me, but tell us where you land.
I am from the Caribbean, and I have equal white and black in my family, but I look very white to the eye. I will vote for Barack Obama if he's the nominee. I would vote for Hillary clinton if she's the nominee.
Who do you think? But you're going to have to choose the nominee, my dear fellow American. So if you're a Democrat, who do you vote for?
I will vote for Hillary Clinton.
Does that mean that you're putting your gender first?
Hillary is she's the brightest woman that will run in this position for the next 30 years. I cannot miss this opportunity to hear a woman's voice in the White House. I can't. As much as I love Barack Obama, he has youth on his side. I love him. I love him. He could be the next president of the United States. But in this election, I am a Hillary Clinton fan.
Anita, you carry it well, and we appreciate that. Gloria Steinem today writing, watch out for the gender card in this election, standing up for Hillary. Joe Klein, do you see? I mean, we've got to take a minute and peel it all away here. There has never been a woman in this position before quite as close to a nomination as Hillary Clinton right now. Is somehow gender sneaking up on her and giving her trouble?
Well, I think that the point that Gloria Steinem makes this morning is that it is just generically tougher for a woman to participate in this process. And I think that she has a real point here because, you know, it would be, you know, it was fine for Bill Clinton to feel your pain by biting his lip and getting all teary-eyed and everything. Mm-hmm. But you saw what happened yesterday when Hillary Clinton, you know, didn't even shed a tear. And people kind of went berserk.
Though they haven't given her the musky treatment yet. I heard Mike Murphy, the conservative columnist, saying if she loses here, she's musky in a pantsuit. But I don't see people putting that nail in Hillary Clinton's coffin.
So.
She hung tough even when she was emotional.
I think that's right. But still, she doesn't have the leeway to be emotional that any given male candidate has. And a woman has a very tough job. She has to prove that she's tough. She has to be able to fend off other candidates. And I'll go back to the thing that, the quality that would be most important in a woman running for president, and that is humor.
EJ, Jack, here we are. We cannot discount gender as an issue here. It's just baked into the way people look at the world. Hillary carries it. She's carried it well. But is it still somehow working against her? Is Barack Obama advantaged, never mind everything else, race? Is he advantaged just by being male in this leadership contest?
Well, I think he is because Hillary Clinton, to some degree, and you know, her campaign sometimes sounds like they're using this as an alibi, but I think it's a legitimate point. She is damned if she does and damned if she doesn't.
Right.
If she looks tough, they say, ah, she's strident. If she looks soft, they say, ah, she's playing the gender card. So I think there, and you know, on that very incident yesterday, there was a lot of discussion, maybe only among cynical reporters, is she playing the gender card, which I think was unfair.
Was it play acting? It sure didn't look that way.
And so, yes, I think it is. I think it's a very difficult thing. What's odd is that we are way behind the world on this, as Gloria Steinem points out. I mean, Israel, India, Norway, we can go through a very long list of countries that have had, and Great Britain with Margaret Thatcher. Mm. I've always had the theory that the first woman president will be a Republican because it'll probably be a crossover figure who can hold the conservative base or whatever is left of it in 5 years and then pull over some women from the Democratic
side. But if it were ever going to be a Democrat, wouldn't this be the year? I mean, this is the year that the tide feels their way.
But there's a There's a key part. I mean, it was what Hillary, what EJ was saying before. There's a key part of being a candidate that Hillary doesn't have, and that is the ability to inspire, and also there is all of these factors that she has absolutely no control over. The fact that she's part of a political dynasty in a year when people are looking to turn the page.
And she does not have the press on her side. A key role
correct.
For any presidential candidate is to schmooze the press. George Bush did it very successfully in 2000. Al Gore ignored them. He paid the price. And it is clear in the undertones as well as in the explicit reporting that reporters do not like her. And that has been, and media people, I mean, my God, Chris Matthews, his show is beat up on Hillary.
Yeah, but come on, does she like them? I haven't exactly seen her making herself warm. She walked those cookies on the bus the other day, you know, for reporters, but it was hardly with a kind of,
well, that's
you know,
what I'm saying. She has not done what you have to do, which is to flatter them,
Joe,
and bring them inside.
Could I just say that I haven't had any problems with her at all. And found her to be accessible, and charming, and really informative. But I got to say that the decision to treat the press as if they were a virus, is one of the stupidest decisions that I've ever seen a campaign make. On Sunday, I think EJ was there. In Nashua, she held a press availability. Chris Matthews was pointing his finger at her and pummeling her. And finally, he asked her, "Will you be on the show?" And she just goes, "Come on, Chris." And
forget about it.
Yeah. And then she says, "I don't know what it is about me that have all you guys obsessed with me." And then she goes over and she gives him a hug and she pats him on the cheek and says, "Baby." and you know,
I'm not sure what that baby means.
This is a woman who very rarely says something stupid, and I think that she could have been far more
absolutely.
Open.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think she could have been far more open. I had an interview with her when she rolled out her health care plan, and that's an interesting moment because I think the single most successful moment of the Clinton campaign is when they rolled out their health care plan. They made her accessible to everybody. They sort of even timed when people's columns were running, as far as I could tell. She was terrific. I mean, you know, yes, she used some boilerplate, but that's called message discipline in other spheres, but she was very good.
EJ, you're using past tense there. Yeah, you know.
No, I am. I don't think it's over yet, and that's what I was going to get to. I think what you point out, or what Jack pointed out, is true, that there has been an imbalance. There is just a fascination, at
impressed
least
treatment.
With this Obama phenomenon. I think the Clinton campaign is praying and hoping, to use a Huckabee and an Obama word, that the press sort of subjects Obama to tougher treatment between now and February 5th. I think that is an unstated but integral part of the Hillary Clinton comeback that they hope to stage on February 5th.
By the way, Barack Obama does need this.
Yes.
I mean,
he needs what?
Scrutiny.
He needs scrutiny, and he needs this process to continue for as long as possible, especially when it gets down to one-on-one, which is what John Edwards is hoping.
Before the Republicans get on it. What? John Edwards hoping?
That he'll be the last guy standing.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's, you know, it'll be a very valuable experience for Barack Obama to be doing one-on-one debates before he has to do a one-on-one debate against the Republicans.
Does Edwards really believe that out of a one-on-one with Obama, if that's what it comes down to, he can emerge as the top guy?
Of course he does.
Well, I mean, of course. Okay.
But if you're
If
you're the only name left on the ballot against somebody and something unexpected happens, you're on the ballot and you might get some votes.
Yeah. Let's go to our listeners in Worcester, Massachusetts. Festus is calling. Festus, it's been a long time. You're on the air.
Yeah. I'd say I'm from Africa. And
great. What do you know? What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, we all hoping to get Hillary in the White House, and all of a sudden Obama gets in, and you know I'm an African. I will be so excited. We'll be so happy to get Obama in there. But the way we see it, we see Republicans and independents voting for him to get the nomination, and then are they going to vote for him in the final election? And then if they don't vote for him in the final election, then Hillary is out. And at this point, up to this point, nobody has scrutinized Obama, and nobody knows what is going on. You know, all these people were voting for him to get the nomination. Are they going to vote for him on the final election?
Festus, let that question sit there for just one moment. The world wants to know, and this is America with all of our history. It's a very legitimate question. Let me get another call on the subject from Columbia, South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes. My comment was on the experience issue. I've been an Obama supporter pretty early in the process, and I really think he does have the experience. I mean, you look at someone like George Bush. He came in with a lot of experience. People like to compare him to George Bush, but George Bush was the governor of a state. He came with a lot of experience, and you saw what we had there. And also, I really think that the tide is turning here in South Carolina. You know, me being an African-American man, I kind of talked to a lot of different folks here. And a lot of people are starting to come to the Obama camp. And the American Idol comment, I think, was kind of unfair, too, because you're penalizing a person because other people seem to be attracted to him because of the
Mark, let me ask you then. There you are, African-American in South Carolina. We just heard from our caller Festus. He's from Ghana. He's looking on as an African at the United States of America and asking, when it really comes down to it, push comes to shove, will the race issue still derail this African-American candidate? What do you say, Mark?
Well, you know, being from South Carolina, it always has to be in the back of your mind. I mean, race is always an issue here, unfortunately. And but you got to have hope, and that's what one of the main reasons for Barack Obama. You got to have hope.
Well, that's the word from Barack, Jack.
And race, I'm afraid, is going to return to the campaign in a way that may be difficult for Obama. The 15th Amendment, effectively, I think, is going to be on the line with the Supreme Court decision about the voter ID case. If that case comes down, and it comes down saying that these voter ID laws are constitutional, that'll be the most severe abridgment of the 15th Amendment since the Reconstruction, post-Reconstruction
Amen.
Era. And it's going to force Barack Obama to have to talk about issues of racial justice.
I've got to break in because Edward's supporters want a voice in this conversation. We have one right now from Norwich, Connecticut. Varda, you're on the air.
Hi, no, it's Norwich, Vermont.
I'm getting cross-eyed here. What do you say, Barbara?
Across the river from Hanover.
Of course.
Well, I'm an Edwards. My husband and I are both Edwards supporters. We know that both Hillary and Barack have gotten big money from Wall Street. Hillary got money from the Bush Rangers. Barack's lobbyist.
That would surprise me. But
the lobbyists for the drug companies. And I just think, you know, we've got a corporate, as Edward says, a corporate iron grip on Washington.
And if it's Obama, do you think he would go after that, or do you see him as a creature of that?
No, I think he's a player, and that's why he's getting money from the big money interests. And you just have to watch the money trail. Why is Wall Street giving all this money to somebody like him? Because they want Wall Street's got the power. I mean, Wall Street could be have a different position completely, but they don't, and they're just it's like flowing from a swollen river into their pockets. And
Varda, we've got it. Joe Klein, there's the Pitchfork Rebellion out of Vermont today that, you know, nobody is tough enough but John Edwards. Nobody else is out of the pocket of big money. Do you see that selling as a message? Do you see Edwards effectively hanging in?
It's kind of ironic, given the fact that John Edwards was the only one of these Democratic candidates who ever worked for a hedge fund.
And not so long ago.
And, you know, I think that, that populism has overtaken the Democratic Party because of events on the ground, because there is a tremendous imbalance between the rich and the rest of the country. And I've heard Obama talking about it. I've heard Clinton talking about it, not in the harsh terms that Edwards uses, but I think we're headed that way no matter what. The question is whether you do it by getting everybody around the table, or whether you do it by just, you know, screaming at the bad guys. And to do it by screaming at the bad guys, you got to build the most humongous political majority imaginable, and that has never happened in the history of this country.
You know, I'm an old Illinois kid. I know Chicago is very excited about this Obama candidacy. My old friend from Chicago, Phil Crone, Politico there, saying to me just last night, you know, it's all sewn up. You saw that surge in Iowa. He's going to go all the way. There's no chance the Republicans might as well just surrender right now. We heard Pat Buchanan in our last hour saying no way, they can still do it. E.J. Dionne, what do you say? Can the GOP stand up against this Obama charisma?
They can, but I think they have a lot of structural problems. I just want to go back to the Edwards person for a second. You know, I grew up in a mill town called Fall River, about 80 miles south of here. I am a sucker for the dad in the mill speech that Edwards gives.
Yep.
And I think he's brought something very important to this campaign. And when you look at Obama's rhetoric and Clinton's rhetoric, they have adjusted to Edwards.
Absolutely.
And they have injected more populism into their speeches. Right. And I think that's been very important
to their
success. Is
there a ticket there, Obama-Edwards?
I don't think so.
No, I don't
And so I think that's important. And on the Republican side, Mike Huckabee, although his policies like his wacky tax plan are not exactly populist in their effect, this is a Republican who's talking about the Wall Street to Washington corridor. You don't hear that a lot in Republican politics. So I agree with Joe. The massive inequality makes the Edwards kind of message inevitable. And on Obama's strength in the fall, I think we can talk about that. We're out of time.
What do you say today?
I think he's a very tough candidate. I think some of it, he's got to show, as Dante Scala said a while back, that he can pick up these working class votes. The other question is, does he have enough reach in the upper middle class to make up for whatever he might lose on that end? If there is a small reaction to him as somebody who either lacks experience or on race.
Well, today it's all about New Hampshire. We'll be watching all the way through. A.J. Dionne with the Washington Post. Look for his book, sold out in bookstores soon. Thanks for being
with us.
Joe Klein with Time Magazine. Always great to have you. Jack Beatty, I guess, get out there and vote, my friend.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.